And with that, we are going to move to item 20. We'll receive the stamp project and 2025 accomplishments. Welcome.
He's getting that pulled up. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. I'm Ryan Weniger, Habitat Program Administrator. Jake, you want to introduce yourself?
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator.
Yeah, so today we're going to cover a couple things, kind of a presentation that's broken into two different parts, but the first part of it is going to be focused on all the accomplishments that we used Habitat Stamp funds for in 2025. So taking kind of a look back at last year, what we accomplished. So we'll get things going here. So the terrestrial side of things, I'm going to cover. Jake's going to cover the aquatic side of things. But a couple different areas here that we focused on in 2025. Game production areas, we did some work, or quite a bit of work. We also used funds to cover costs for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, the CREP programs in eastern South Dakota. And then we also used it for walk-in area access program payments for signing bonuses. So just jumping into some of the GPA things that we worked on, the game production areas, grass and board plantings are very important to us. This last year as a whole, we did about 1,800 acres of grass and form plantings on GPAs, but we only used Habitat Stamp for about 170 acres on seven different GPAs. The other funding, we used Pittman Robertson funds for a lot of the projects. So just think, keep that in mind that this is just using Habitat Stamp funds, not our other funding sources. Food plots, we had a couple of different food plots, one GPA, one GPA, and I believe there was a recreation area that doesn't look like it's showing up, but we have one recreation area as well on the park side that we helped do some work on that allows hunting, 190 acres between those two properties. Part of that on this particular GPA, we're working through conversion of some poor grass stands that had previous farming history prior to us owning it, and so we're transitioning food plots through that landscape and then receding back native grasses on those food plots as we transition and kind of convert some of the smooth brome Kentucky bluegrass stands that aren't so good for habitat. Hardwood release program that we're doing on a few of our GPAs, four different properties there, 120 acres. This property down shown on the picture here on the left is down in southeast South Dakota near Newton Hills area. In that particular game production area, we're trying to recruit oak trees and some of the hardwood species by removing some of the cedar trees that have grown up underneath and not allowing for regeneration of some of those desirable hardwood species. And we've also kind of gone into some of our shelter belts and tried to clean up a few things, and then we're going to come back in and actually do some new plantings of some shrubs within some of those rows. So just some unique work that's taking place around forestry type stuff on our properties. We're also planting shelter belts with Habitat Stamp. We did 18 and a half acres, five different game production areas. Some of the photos there were, we have staff that are doing it, planting the trees themselves, but we also contract with conservation districts around the state to help us with some of that work. So it's kind of a partnership there. A lot of good shelter belts going in this last year with Habitat Stamp. Grass management and grazing. Another important component, we have a lot of grassland on our properties, and so managing those grasslands through grazing, fire, other means are important to keep those stands healthy. And so installing grazing infrastructure helps us utilize joining landowner tenants and things like that with their cattle to come in and help manage our grass. And so we did three projects on three GPAs, 1.63 miles of new fence, a couple of water development projects. If you're going to graze cattle, you know you need to have water to water them while they're out there. So that's part of the project as well. And then we also have some old fence that sometimes that we just hadn't gotten around to pulling. In this particular case, it was a bigger complex over in the eastern part of the state. We hired a contractor to come in and just remove a whole bunch of old interior fence that was there from probably when we bought the property or acquired the property back in the day, and just cleaning it up so it's not on the landscape, snagging up dogs and things like that on the landscape and improving the area. Access trails and roads, another important thing. We have all this great habitat. We have great wildlife populations on our areas. We got to get people to have access to them. And so 6.6 miles of roads and trails that we worked on across seven GPAs. improving some of those low areas coming into properties or getting access. Not everybody has a four-wheel drive pickup, so allowing some, you know, smaller vehicles that maybe people from the city of Sioux Falls or other places that just maybe have a car want to go out and do some hunting have a hard time getting access to. So keeping those roads and trails in good shape is important to get people to our properties to hunt. Along with that, parking lots are also important. Having a nice place to park and designated that area that's not overgrown with grass or big old water hole, potholes, things like that, trying to improve those parking areas so people know where they can park, getting them off some of those roads, those township and county roads, as those are important for equipment access, especially during the fall with farmers going up and down the roads, getting them off those county roads onto the GPA and a little parking area is important. And then also waterfall access trails was also part of this or ramps that we worked on, a couple of those as well, to try to improve waterfall hunting on some of our areas. Switching gears to the access side of things, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, I think most of us are aware of the James River watershed CREP that we have going on. This last year, Habitat Stamp Funds helped with 24,000 acres for payments on those acres. Currently, we're sitting at about 86,000 acres of our 100,000 acre goal. Continue to work on that, enrolling new properties. And as the properties are expiring there, we're trying to get them re-enrolled. The Big Sioux River CREP watershed, which is fairly new, launched in 2022. That one there, we covered 4,500 acres of payments this last year with Habitat Stamp. Again, our goal there is 25,000 acres. So we're continuing to work towards that goal. Just putting in a little plug right now, FSA is accepting CRP applications that include CREP. I think you have till March 20th. So if there's any landowners or producers listening in, it now is the time to get into your FSA offices if you're considering enrolling in CREP. So 2025 summary there, just shy of 30,000 acres were covered. The payments on those acres were covered by Habitat Stamp. Just shy of $1.3 million paid out to landowners for those properties. As enrollment continues, as we still have acres that we want to get to in our goals, so will the demand for the use of Habitat Stamp funds to cover those costs. And then we're also maximizing these funds. So the $1.3 million that we use, we're leveraging that against our PR grant to try to make those dollars go further, to pull in the PR dollars to cover the rest of the payments on the CREP program. So just stretching the dollars as far as we can, being efficient with them. Then lastly, on the terrestrial side, we have the walk-in area program. In this particular case, we enrolled multi-year contracts with a lot of cooperators that we were working on, 91,000 acres in total. And we're paying upfront signing bonuses on those contracts, essentially locking them in for an average length here of 9 years, giving them an upfront signing bonus. And then if they do back out of the contract for some reason, that comes back to us. We paid out about $750,000 in signing bonuses. Again, it's been well spoken about our access and how important that is. And so securing these long-term contracts is very important for our users. And I'll turn it over to Jake.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. So just be covering some of the aquatics accomplishments from 2025. Some of the areas that we work in across the state, we have a lot of infrastructure, 77 dam that GFP owns across the state. They certainly require maintenance and improvements. A lot of them have been out there for a long, long time. Additionally, a lot of access points, over 500 boat ramps in the state. They as well need maintenance and improvements throughout the year and throughout the years. And then also, as Ryan mentioned, the importance of access. We want to make sure that we've got good access for users to get to the great aquatic resources that South Dakota has. Talk about some of the habitat improvements and also our access leases. Not the same magnitude that terrestrial has, but we do have aquatic leases and longevity payments that go with those as well. The unique thing there is we may only open up a small portion of land, an acre or two, but it might open up hundreds of acres of water. So just to touch on our dam infrastructure maintenance and improvement, we addressed 7 dams in 2025. Of the 77 that we have across the state in the last several years, we've addressed 30 of them now. These can be anything fairly minor to essentially fixing cracks on a spillway or removing vegetation on the dam face to a full renovation. Just kind of depends on what the need might be. These dams are inspected either by internal staff or by outside contractors as well. In
2025, the seven that we maintained, three of them were simply maintenance or improvements. We had three that were much larger projects, partnering with federal entities or FEMA, depending on a high water event, maybe that compromised the dam. And then one restoration on the Fort Pierre National Grasslands. This was a pretty cool project where we took a dam that had been compromised, no longer providing any sort of fishery, and we were able to do a complete renovation and now provides a fishery on that Fort Pierre National Grasslands. The photos that you see here, the new Stickney Dam, that's one again that was compromised in a 2019 high water event and is a complete renovation with new structures. So again, can vary depending on what the need might be. Looking at some of our improvements, boat ramp improvements to get people the water. We have a diverse group of users here in the state that use a variety of watercraft on to get to the aquatic resources that we have. Anything from a hand-launched canoe, kayak to, again, some of these more complex boats that we see. This picture here is highlighting something on Wolf's Flue, where we were able to go in, paired with an access agreement, along with some public land, and then basically create a much more user-friendly access point. This would be something similar to a primitive boat ramp, as we would call it, more of a hand launch. However, you could launch with a trailer as well if need be. And we had four projects across the state in four different counties, and on an annual basis, again, we're just seeing what's needed on the landscape and going in and making those improvements. And again, they can be anything from very simple like this to a complete renovation of a large plank boat ramp in some cases. Some of the habitat improvements that we did across the state in 2025, and when I say we, I should mention our staff. We've got habitat staff across the state that are putting these projects on the ground. We had eight fish passage projects that occurred, and what I mean by fish passage, we've got these pictures here on the left of culverts. These can create issues in flowing waters where you may have a terminal drop where a fish is not able to make that jump, if you will, and it becomes a barrier. We have a number of native sport fish and non-sport fish that need to pass these structures to access different forms of habitat. And so we address this with a number of ways. And in some cases here, just something as simple as a structure that we can put onto that culvert, kind of a fish ladder that allows fish to pass. So we have a number of these fish barriers around the state. We address them annually. We did eight in 2025. Also had a dredging project. This is where we're going in, removing sediment. Sedimentation is a major issue in impoundments all across the state. In areas that we feel like we can go in and conduct this removal, we will. It is fairly costly at times, and so we are very strategic when we do this activity just because it can be a very large endeavor. We also had one stream restoration. This was on a cold water stream in eastern South Dakota, a very unique habitat. Now we're able to go in. Sedimentation was an issue there as well. We're able to work with that habitat, essentially remove habitat, move some things around, some in-stream habitat, and really kind of get that back to a cold water fishery that can sustain both cold water trout, cold water species such as trout, but also benefits native species as well. We also put out fish habitat structures across the state. This can include man-made structures such as a mossback commercially made product or large woody debris and organic material. So again, just looking at what's available and what's needed in those locations. So we did eight fish habitat structures and in different waters, and eight fish habitat structure projects, not just eight structures themselves. These projects usually involve many, many structures. And then we also did one native shoreline planting. This is where we go in and return shoreline vegetation that may be Kentucky bluegrass and a manicured lawn to native shoreline vegetation that reduces sedimentation, reduces nutrient loading, and is something that we push in a lot of locations across the state if possible. As far as trail improvement and development, we do a lot of work across the state where we put out fishing docks and piers, help people get to the water. A lot of times you're putting docks and piers out to get past some of that shoreline vegetation so they have easier time fishing. We had seven pier projects and seven dock projects across the state, a variety of other ones. We do a lot of access projects. We had 28 other projects that occurred. This can be anything from vegetation removal, removing cattails so people can get to the shoreline. The image you have here is just some dense shoreline vegetation being removed and then going in with a rock basically to allow for a casting platform, if you will. So a lot of different access projects across the state. And then we also improve roads and trails, as Ryan mentioned, important that we can get vehicles and people to the water. So we had just under 4 miles of access trail improvement in 2025. Did want to cover access leases real quick. As I mentioned, the lease themselves may be for a very small piece of land, an acre or so. However, it does open up a lot. So we had two access leases. One was 1 acre, the other was 1,350 feet. However, that opens up almost 900 acres of water to users. So I just want to cover those as well.
All right. So yeah, a lot of different projects happening across the state. Here on the next couple of slides, I'm going to share just some maps of where those projects are located, and then a place that the general public can also go and look if they're curious as to where these projects are taking place. So here's the 2025 Habitat Stamp project map. Kind of see projects scattered across the entire state. Some of the private lands access projects there in the Northeast seem to be a little bit heavy, and that's related back to the CREP program and also the walk-in area program. Just a lot of properties enrolled in that part of the area. But as you can see, just a lot of projects across the entire state, trying to reach every community and every local county as to creating new opportunities for our wildlife and for our users. Here's a combined list going back since the inception of the Habitat Stamp. Again, just a broad range of different projects across the entire state. I will point out again on this map too, like the terrestrial points are pretty heavy on the eastern part of the state, and that's just related back to we have a lot more game production areas, a lot smaller game production areas, East River versus West River. So there's just a lot more opportunities in that part of the state for us to do that type of habitat work. And then lastly, here is just the online habitat stamp dashboard that anybody can go to through our website. They can zoom in on these particular points, see exactly what the cost of a particular project was. We do have photos on quite a few of these points, especially the terrestrial and the aquatic side, where we're doing a particular project, whether it's a tree planting or something like that, where we're trying to photograph and add that photo. So when people want to see what type of project it was, they can actually see a actual live photo of what's out there, an actual photo of the project when it took place. So just a neat resource if you're curious or have people that are asking questions about, you know, where's my habitat stamp money going, this is a good spot to go send them to. And with that, we'll take questions on that portion of our presentation for 2025 accomplishments. Very good.
Questions from the commission, comments? Commissioner Whitmire.
Thank you, Commissioner Whitmire, and thank you. Great presentation on all points. Pointedly on the parking areas, kudos. I mean, that's always a deal when it's harvest and hunting are at the same exact time, and some of those vehicles along those road edges really can be an issue, and that anything that we can do to kind of curb some of that potential downfall is great. So no, it was really no, but the whole presentation was good. But, so thank you.
Additional questions, Commissioner Patrick?
Commissioner Nyberg, Ryan, on the food plots, are you able to track usage at all?
Chair, I think the best recommendation there would be to talk to our local conservation officers or maybe patrolling some of those areas and seeing what kind of use those food plots are being used. If that's your question, I guess, related to hunter use, is that we don't get getting it? Yeah, so I think that'd be probably our best source of kind of a guide as to how much they're being used. Yeah.
And how many are there again? Within the habitat areas, how many food plots?
So we plant approximately like 5,300 acres, somewhere around there, if I'm remembering correctly, of food plots across all of our game production areas. The number of them varies because we have everything from maybe a 1 acre food plot up to, 10 or more acres of food plot at one site. So there's the actual plot number of plots, I couldn't give you right offhand, but about 5,000 acres of food plots.
Well, I'm the new kid on the block here, the new commissioner. I'm going to echo Commissioner Whitmore. You guys do a great job, and kudos to you. The concern I have, or what I'd like to say, is does the public know what you're doing? If I don't go to the dashboard, how do we get the message out? I think the key word is opportunity. You guys are providing amazing opportunity for fishing, hunting in South Dakota, and the public needs to know what you guys are doing. It's great stuff.
I was waiting for that.
I was waiting to tap in. Oh, no mic, so I can just do it from here. Nick Harrington, Communications Manager. And great question, Commissioner Nyberg. And one thing that we do, we share these projects in a lot of ways, right? So in our Conservation Digest, which is put out every quarter, we have a specific habitat stamp project section, which is really popular. These guys are a huge help with that. And then likewise, as these projects are completed, we share them on social media too. So those pictures that we get from those folks out in the field that is doing that work, we put that out there. We showcase that. Those always get a lot of really good feedback and engagement too, right? So between our social media, between our digest, our annual report has a really nice habitat stamp section too. And again, that dashboard is very, very well used, very well liked as well. So a variety of avenues we get them out there. But like you said, awesome stories that people love to see out in the field. It's that $10, you sure get a good return on investment, huh? So thank you.
Good.
Did you want to add to that, Ryan?
No, that's exactly what I was going to cover. So,
Commissioner Kirkaby, did you have a question?
They answered it.
Thank you. Very good. Yeah. Any other questions and or comments? Job well done. I echo everything that's been said.
Yeah.
So thank you both.
We'll move on to the second portion. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
So this brings us to the second portion of the presentation. So this will be discussing the next 3-year strategic approach that we have for habitat stamp funds. So this will be the second iteration of this strategic approach. We had one that was 2023 to 2025. This next iteration, 2026 to 2028. I believe you all have a copy of it as well. Just a quick review on the habitat stamp created by Senate Bill 75, passed during the 2020 legislative session. Annually generates around $5 million of annual revenue. The cost is $10 for residents, $25 for non-residents. Most license type require the purchase of a habitat stamp. However, there are a few exceptions. But again, the majority of licenses, you'll need to buy that habitat stamp with your first license purchase. So one per year, essentially. That is split between aquatic and terrestrial, spent on habitat and access projects. So this strategic approach that we're going to cover is just kind of a guiding document that we use for how these dollars are going to be put on the landscape. It's going to include priorities, goals, and strategies, and we'll cover that in this presentation. So just real quick, this is essentially the format of what that document's going to have, and then Ryan and I will go through each of these bullet points individually and cover some of the specifics, but it's our toolbox, essentially, and a plan moving forward for the next 3 years with these dollars. So mentioned the passing of Senate Bill 75 in the 2020 legislative session created the habitat stamp. That revenue is generated and split between aquatics and terrestrial. Around $5 million annually is what we've seen over the last handful of years since inception. And areas that we focus on, as Ryan covered with the terrestrial accomplishments in 2025, a lot of it's going to be habitat and access on our state-owned property, such as a game production area. Also, access agreements are important, opening up private land to public hunting and fishing opportunities. Within the aquatic section, a couple main areas that we'd like to focus on, large-scale projects. These can be varied, anything from a impoundment renovation to an in-stream habitat project, partnering with another entity on a large-scale project. But again, we'd like to focus on large-scale if possible. Additionally, a lot of small-scale habitat work and access projects that happen across the state. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of state-owned dams out there that are quite old. They need infrastructure improvements and maintenance as well. And so that's another area that we spend quite a bit of time on and are a big part of this plan. So just to talk about the project types that aquatic habitat and access work on and what we plan to work on here in the next 3 years, I do want to cover what our program looks like. It's a quite small program. It's myself. We have a statewide coordinator and then 6 habitat and access biologists that are stationed across the state. I do want to take this opportunity to thank all the other Game Fish and Park staff that partner with aquatics, though, to implement these projects. It's a big lift. We get a lot of things done, and we couldn't do it with just our aquatic staff. So we get assistance from law enforcement, from parks, from terrestrial. And so with that, I want to thank the staff that are listening. And we also have a lot of great partners out there between federal entities, non-government organizations, individuals. So again, it's a big effort. And all the things that we do fall within the items on this list. So what we do and how we do them, essentially. So the things that we do on public waters, we have infrastructure improvements, whether that's dams, piers, docks, those sorts of things. In-stream habitat work, these are going to primarily focus on our cold water trout populations. However, they do benefit native species as well. We have a number of aeration projects currently ongoing, a number that we've identified for the future as well. So aeration, a lot of cases dealing with water quality, trying to improve dissolved oxygen, for example, to make these fisheries in better shape to sustain poor fish populations. We also do some dredging, fish habitat structures, both natural and man-made. These are put in annually across the state where fish habitat's identified as a limiting factor. And then aquatic access improvements, getting people to the water where we can, or improving what a current access area might look like. And then fisheries renovations. We do some work on private lands, not the same level that Treschel does, but we do some shoreline restorations. This is where I talked about transitioning from, say, a manicured Kentucky bluegrass lawn to a native shoreline vegetation. Again, helps with bank stabilization, reduces sedimentation and nutrient loading, and then also access agreements. So, excuse me, some of the work that we have done and plan to continue to do in the next several years.
Yeah, moving forward, I guess on the terrestrial side, it's a lot of the same things that we covered here this last year. There's kind of an ongoing list of just projects that staff have identified. And so a lot of these things kind of fall into some of these buckets here on the terrestrial side that we focus on our game production areas, native grass and pollinator plantings, woody habitat plantings, the food plots that we talked about, grassland and forest enhancement, access road trail improvement, that sort of stuff that we talked about, waterfall access trails and ramps, grassland management infrastructure. A lot of those things that we did this last year, there's kind of, like I said, an ongoing list of just a lot of things that have been identified that we continue to improve on our game production areas. On the access side of things, our three main focus areas there are going to be the James River watershed, the Big Sioux River watershed, and then again, our walk-in area access program. And I'd also echo what Jake mentioned regarding other staff, that this doesn't just involve a few folks within the public land staff. It goes outside of that. They put a lot of work, obviously, into it, but there's a lot of other partners within in the department as well as outside the department that help make a lot of these projects happen. So project identification, how do we come up with these various lists of projects and things that get accomplished on the terrestrial side? Back in 2018, if you remember, for some of those commissioners that were around at that time, we did a GPA assessment. And we did one again here in 2023 to try to assess our game production areas, rank them, and figure out, okay, what do these properties need to be to the highest level of habitat and access for the users? Staff are also doing evaluations on GPAs annually. A lot of times during the winter months, our public land staff are sitting down with other staff within the region, whether it's conservation officers and others, and talking about the various game production areas and what those areas need, whether it's a additional parking lot, an improvement to a trail, improvement of a grass planting, a new tree belt planted. All those types of conversations are happening at an annual time frame to make sure that we have the best plans moving forward for the summer season. On the aquatic side, annual regional meetings that are taking place to discuss those various projects. Obviously, a lot of waters across the state, a lot of different things that we can improve or identify as time goes. And so they're having annual regional meetings to talk about those things. They're also having staff evaluations, much like our public lands habitat staff are doing. They're evaluating those areas across the state throughout the summer, the different field seasons that they're out there working, doing sampling and other things. So, and then user groups and partners, that's one that we could probably put into both buckets here, terrestrial and aquatics. We hear from a lot of our NGOs, our partners, or our users out there, hey, we really like to see this on this property. So we take all that input as well and try to put that into what some of our planning and project identification. That's covered kind of on the last bullet there, the resources and partnerships. All these projects involve a large range of different resources, partners, contractors. I mentioned conservation districts, counties, townships, we're working on some particular roads, landowners, tenants helping us with grazing. There's just a lot of different people involved in a lot of these projects. So yeah, just very diverse. Priorities, goals, and strategies in this strategic approach. The priorities here, the first one being to increase and improve terrestrial and aquatic habitat to sustain healthy populations of fish and wildlife species for current and future generations. I think that meshes very well with our mission as a department. And then priority number two is to increase user opportunity and experience through enhancement of habitat and access, both terrestrial and aquatic, on and to public lands and waters, and by providing additional public access to private land. So two key priorities there that we want to focus on. I think those define what we want to do very well. goals. We have 9 on the terrestrial side, 6 on the aquatic side. And then within each of those goals, we have in the plan or the strategic approach, we have some specific strategies that for each of those that are developed. So moving forward on the terrestrial side, here are some of the goals that we have to use habitat stamp funds for. Annually plant down 400 acres of native grass and pollinator plots, plant 15 acres of woody habitat, 250 acres of annual or perennial food plots, and then 300 acres annually of grassland or forest enhancement. Also improve or develop road and trail access to 6 game production areas or other publicly owned property. Work on improving or developing 5 waterfall access sites. The past probably 10 years, we've developed a lot of waterfall access ramps, trails, things like that. We need to come back to some of those ramps and add in some gravel or some things to make sure that we're improving or keeping them up to speed as to good quality access ramps. So we'll be doing some of that work. And then annually improve or develop some of our grassland management infrastructure on 8 different areas. On the access side of things, we want to continue to enroll acres into our Big Sioux River watershed CREP and our James River watershed CREP, try to reach those CAP goals for those particular projects. And then we also want to try to secure additional 20,000 acres of undisturbed habitat through our walk-in area program, using those signing bonuses as incentives to get those properties enrolled for multi-year contracts.
So on the aquatic side, covering our goals that we have for the next 3 years, 2 goals. Annually, we like to improve access or habitat a minimum of 3 urban and community fisheries. So we define an urban or community fishery as anything within city limits or within a mile of city limits. In a very basic sense, it's something that a youth could ride a bike to. I'm really trying to provide opportunity where transportation is not a barrier for that individual. We've got these all across the state. We've got some really fantastic ones, and we're very fortunate because we continue to add them on an annual basis. Capitol Lake's a great example of one that was very recently added to the list. But annually, we want to continue to improve at least 3, just because, again, we look at these as great resources close to our population centers. Additionally, our second goal would be to improve access to a minimum of 10 waters across the state. This can be in the form of a lot of different, whether it's docks and piers or vegetation removal, basically just getting people to that water. For our habitat goals, we've got several. We like to improve aquatic habitat in a minimum of 5 standing waters. So by standing, we mean a pond or an impoundment or a lake. We'd also like to do at least 1 a minimum of 3 locations of in-stream habitat work by 2028. So hopefully 1 a year would be our goal. This would involve in-stream habitat, securing more water in some cases that might be a regulated stream, or additionally rocks, boulders, whatever it might be. So we want to make sure that we cover in-stream habitat. And then additionally, 1 large-scale project on an annual basis. These can be quite varied in nature, from essentially complete renovation or a dam rebuild, or partnering with another entity on a large dredging project, for example. But we'd like to do 1 large scale on an annual basis. So that's the goals that we have for aquatic habitat for the next 3 years. And the last one would be our infrastructure. We've got these state-owned impoundments. We'd like to improve infrastructure. Basically, on an annual basis, we've got reports, both internal inspections and also from an outside contractor that inspected these dams. We have those reports, and we'd like to continue to chip away. As I mentioned, we've addressed 30 of our 77 dams. There are still additional needs that need to be met out there, and so on an annual basis, we want to continue to address those with that state-owned infrastructure on the landscape. As far as the reporting, as was kind of mentioned earlier, a lot of different ways that we try and get the word out to the public on where these dollars are going and how they can utilize this. We've got the online on the GFP website, the Where the Money Goes, and on the Habitat Stamp dashboard. We also provide an annual update to Government Operations and Audit Committee on an annual basis. Each fall, we're there in front of that entity providing an update on what was accomplished the previous year. As Nick mentioned, social media platforms, share a lot of these on Facebook and the other media platforms that are out there. Really, whenever we have the opportunity to highlight a project that was maybe recently completed, we want to do that.
And we also put signage out there. The sign that you can see the sign there on the right, and it's got a QR code. So if users scan that QR code, it takes them to the dashboard. But we put these signs out when a project is completed using Habitat stamp dollars. Always looking for ways to highlight the projects that are happening out there and want to make sure users know where their money is going and how that money is put out on the landscape. And with that, Ryan, I'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Kirkby.
Commissioner Kirkby, I heard you say something about securing more water on a regulated stream. I'm not familiar with what that issue would be.
Sure. Through the chair. Yeah, Commissioner Kirkby, so for example, especially in the Black Hills, we have a number of dams out there, Pactola Dam being the primary one. That's what we call a regulated water, where you have storage in the reservoir, and then there's releases that go into Rapid Creek below. Rapid Creek, right below Pactola Dam, has one of our premier trout fisheries in it. But what we found is that trout population is very tied to releases and available water coming through that dam. So we are not the managing entity. It's the City of Rapid and Bureau of Reclamation. However, we work with those entities to maximize release schedules or annual releases to try and maximize water in Rapid Creek to sustain and increase that trout population below. And so that's an example there where, in a very basic sense, we're just trying to provide more water for fish. And we use Habitat stamp dollars to partner on some of the efforts that are there to maximize flows from Pactola Dam, for example.
Okay. Secretary Roblin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you both for your leadership. This is excellent. The goals you identified, you know, within the larger strategic plan of the department, it's Habitat and Access. And then you went down and refined those goals, and I surely appreciate that with staff's input. So thank you for that. I just wanted to, I guess, relay the message I received from Senator B.J. Smith. He was the father of Senate Bill 75. I just talked to him last week via email because he was giving an update at the Grassland Summit about the Habitat stamp. And he was ecstatic about the projects that we have done, the work we've accomplished, the money we've spent, and where we spent it. So just kudos to all of you, staff. It's been an excellent success story since 2020. We're putting those dollars right back on the ground, and it's been a very positive one. So thank you for that, and the Senator's very happy. So thank you.
Very good. Questions from the commission? Jake, two questions. When you were talking about the goals for the aquatic habitat and the urban community fisheries, have you identified where those might be, or how will that fall into play?
Yes, Madam Chair. So in a lot of cases, it's identifying where we have maybe either new urban community fisheries coming online, or we have some, say, in the northeast part of the state where we have a large population center where we just have been doing work for several years, but we've identified, say, continuing limiting factors. Hopefully that's answering your question. I mean, again, on an annual basis, it's working with staff and they're identifying priority projects, and then we meet as a group and rank those essentially in those urban community. They're all bringing different options from around the state, and then we discuss them as a group and where they fit within the program and rank on a priority level across the state is probably the best way I can put it.
Okay, that helps me. And then similar to that, when we talk about 10 additional access to water areas, same thing. Have you identified where those might take place?
We do, and again, this is where staff across the state are going to put together their regional lists, and they create these lists by either working with other GFP staff, say park staff, and looking at waters that parks might be located on, or working with municipalities, whatever it might be. They take those lists, and then we meet together and essentially make sure that we're providing projects all across the state, but also trying to, as best we can, prioritize what staff bring. There's no shortage of opportunity out there for projects. And so really it comes down to looking at our available budget and then prioritizing the list that staff bring in. So to answer your question, yes, we have them identified for the next several years. It's just a planning exercise at this point.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Seeing no other questions or comments from the commission, again, thank you. Great report.